I looked at myself and I said to myself, this is pretty easy for me, dealing with my people, kids that are like I was when I was growing up. And I said, what, looking at the gospel and asking myself about the power of the gospel, and I really wondered, could I deal with, was my power, was the affirmation that I was receiving as a disciple, was that really me, or is that the gospel? Well, it's not what I mean to say, but is it real, was really the question. Could I walk out of this context, and is that power still there in another context? So I accepted a job coming out to the Northwest and working at a school, which is, it's one of the most affluent schools in the Northwest, Oregon Episcopal School. Some of you may know that school and the accident that occurred on Mount Hood. And we have students that come from Japan and Europe, children from the Northwest, and it's a private school as well. We have a boarding department. And I really put myself on the line to test and see if that power of God does transcend culture. And so that's just a piece of my story. And that when I talk about ethnocentrism and how we confine ourselves to just living within people that look like us and feeling good about ourselves because we can master that domain, and challenging others to be in relationship and to expand our relationships to experience the gospel, it isn't just something that I challenge white people with. I mean, we're all subject to that, and that's an idolatry that we all face. And so I just want to say that I'm a Lutheran, and I'm very confessional, that what I challenge other people to do, I know that I have the same challenge. You know, that we're all sinners. And, you know, so we're all in this together. So if you feel that I'm pushing you, it's because I also push myself. And the gospel pushes me. And we're called to be pushed. And that's what I believe much of living in relationship is. I have two things that I prepared here. One is I have a number of texts that talk about relationship. And what I'd like to do is just kind of do an abbreviated piece of God's revelation to us and then get into our story. My theology tells me that, and history tells me, that from the beginning of time, beginning with the Genesis story and before the Genesis story, that we looked for God as a people. We looked for God above the sky, and Genesis talks about the firmaments and then the sea below. That we looked for God way out there someplace. And then as time went on and as time evolved, we began looking for God in the clouds and where else? On mountaintops, right? And in burning bushes. And Moses, we have that story about God being somewhere up there just beyond our reach. And in the imagery of you know, burning bushes. And then we go on to experience God in community. And we have beautiful stories about that, like in the story of Ruth. You know, what is that? Where do we pick that up in the story of Ruth?
Your people will be my people, your God will be my people.
Right, right. And so that able to see God in that relationship in community, that transformation, if you will. And then on to where we actually really get God in concrete, in flesh, in the person of Jesus Christ. And that's the revolution, the revealing of God's story into our lives. Really concrete stuff, and about relationship and through our relationship with God. So that's where I come to this relationship theology, if you will. But it's really, it's gospel theology. And everything that I read in the New Testament says that we get to know God in the concrete form of relationship. And it's not always fun. Right? It confronts us, and it involves law, and it involves gospel. So that's just a frame for us to begin talking about our story. So where do we experience God? I'd like to hear what your context for living is. Where do you live? What's your community like? And how do you experience God? One of the things that struck me that you mentioned about mountains is just how the balance that Holden seems to have, and that it's in this beautiful setting where people can walk and experience nature, but there's still that tremendous dynamic of relationship and these kinds of discussions and, you know, the contact. And I like the fact that Holden seems to keep that in balance. So that just is what I was going to come back to. I'm also struck by the fact no one's mentioned the church yet. And I hope that that's just because that's a given. But I would wish that the church would be stronger, that we can challenge the liturgy and people not feel like that's challenging the church. Yeah, it's just a structure. It's just a tool. I love the church. You know, I'm not doing this, you know, to throw anything out. What about the church? Where do we experience God in church? Let's be concrete.
Well,
yes.
For me, the flip side of that is I have more experience in seeing Satan at church and in the church than I do God, because I look at the divisiveness that's in the church. I look at the politics that's in the church. I look at the backstabbing that's in the church. I look at the hypocrisy that's in the church. And those things are not gospel. And if it's not gospel, it's from the flip side. And those things I see very loud, very clear, and very consistent.
Yeah. I think though, even if those things are present, all the other things are also there. Mm-hmm. I see people working together to achieve a common goal. I see just special moments in church, maybe a baptism or something, where the current seems to be flowing through the church. Church is an organization, so it has some of the negatives of a bureaucracy and all of those things, but I think the things that people normally go to church for are present, mm-hmm. and you have to look for them, or you have to try to create them, or bring them about. The good things are there as well.
I definitely feel much alignment with that, yes.
I experienced the church the night my house burned. And we were standing out there, and there were three fire trucks, and guys were crawling around on the roof, and flames were up everywhere, and my kids were freaking out. And I don't know how they got there, but all of a sudden, all these people from my church started showing up. Guy brought me some clothes, another guy brought me a couple of cold beers. Honest to God, we were partying out there, really
having
a good time.
Sucker bird!
About 10 people from my church out there, and I spent a week with my neighbor across the street, and we talked about a lot of things, but the thing he kept going back to was, there were sure a lot of people from your church out there for 11 o'clock on a Sunday night. Tell me about that place.
Yeah. I love it.
We recently adopted a child, and having him get baptized was really an important to us, and some very close friends of ours who had not been really church decided that they would have their children baptized at the same time, and I think I was more moved when they were baptized than with our own child.
I experienced God in the church most often in the music. I don't know if it's because it centers you on one thing, the thing that you're doing. I mean, I'm reminded of this, but I seem to feel more moved and more centered in the music. And it's not, you know, it's not just necessarily a favorite hymn or a certain part of the liturgy or the new music that we use at our church, but I think it's just that centering where it, because everyone is doing something together, everyone is singing, it's like the vision of how everyone working for a certain goal.
Thank you. Please.
There have been several times in my life where I could say I tasted a bit of heaven or thought, this must be a bit of the gloriousness that it will be. And a couple were new Lutherly type events when I was younger. Holden Village has certainly been that in my life the times I've come. But I, other than a couple single people in my life where I can really feel that relationship and my immediate family, I would say the church would be the other group, where it's a group context where I can feel that, be supported in events, whatever individual events in your life you want to share with them, they would support me in that and go through it. One event was when my house got broken into and the front door had been bashed through, so I couldn't lock my house, which didn't make me feel very secure. Someone's here, and I don't anyway. And one of the guys in the church was a carpenter, and his wife opened the doors, and they were out the next day and secured it for me. And I just know you can count on things like that from the people in the church.
I've become more aware in the last several years that what I used to think were coincidences are not coincidences. And I kind of feel the spirit in some things. You know, your story about the fire reminded me of a situation. And very frequently these happen when I work in the local food bank. And I remember one time, over a year ago, somebody walked in with some pots and pans. They said, could you use these pots and pans? I said, well, I don't know, we might find somebody in who comes in and need a food or someone and needs some pots and pans and some kitchen utensils and a variety of other things. They were moving and they wanted to get rid of these things, so they brought them to us. I thought, well, we'll put them in a corner, maybe something will come up. It wasn't a half an hour later that the next door neighbor of a person who was just burned out came in and said, we want to help our neighbor. Do you have any kitchen utensils? That's not a coincidence. And more I'm aware of experiences like that. That's the hand of God.
Please.
I experience from the extended Christian community, not just our church, but when my son left his neck and he had surgery, and friends from other churches came to the hospital to pray. And he had cards from people I didn't even know who had heard about it and took the time and the courage. It was really moving. Mission Congregation in Clackamas, Oregon. And I would say for me it's the friendship, the fellowship from the people there that has just opened all kinds of doors. It's been a warm feeling. I have always felt, first day that if ever I was in need, I wouldn't have to look very far. It's very helpful.
I share that confidence that you have, that, I mean, it's not always my experience, it's pretty often not my experience, that the church has been there for me, but it gives me a belief, it gives me at least a confidence that push comes to shove, the church is going to be there. And the times when it's not, I find that I'm able to make it on my own. But I really believe that, you know, in those times, of those critical times, that God's going to be there. And for me, God, the church is God. God is the church.
We have a group in our church that, a Bible study group of seniors, and you don't have to be a member of a church. You don't have to know anybody in our church, but if one person has somebody that's close to them and needs something from church, we send cards and we all sign it. And we have had any response from people that it has been a big brightness for them because our church thought enough of them to care. And it's very ministry and it helps a lot of people.
Thank you. Who else? Are the rest of you just dormant? What? Yes?
Well, I lost my husband 3 years ago. And he was sick. All the support we got. No members of the church. And after he's dead, I don't know what I would have done. What about that support? They were always there when I needed them, but if I have to call, they were there. Besides my family.
I kind of found it interesting when you said that the church had not always been there for you, for example, and I sort of get the feeling, when we look at the church as the people that are in the church, that there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to probably be there. It's going to be there. I think if we look at the church as a political unit or bureaucracy, and then you've got people in various power positions and all of those things, I think there are different dynamics going on, and I think in that context, this, you know, the politics of it may cause the church not to be there. But I think if you go back to the grassroots of it and the people and something that people in general can do to help the situation, I think they would be there. I don't know if that's what you had in mind, or yeah, whatever. I hate to think that a congregation in general wouldn't be there, or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I hate to think that too. But yeah, that's part of it, and that's why I really like thinking of God and history beginning, you know, way out there someplace, and then the concrete reality of Jesus Christ and God being right here, and the responsiveness of that, you know, that, and it's kind of touching to me to say at some point that isn't political, you know. I believe that concrete is that also involves the political, but it doesn't always happen. But, and this may be your point too, but maybe the real power of the church beyond the political is the experiences that are shared here, you know, where we know that, you know, that's there's a solid, there's a rock.
What excites me about the church is that it is not limited to a building or a room of people, but it's out in the world. And that's exciting to me, and that's what I see. When we get upset with the church, we're even upset with one little place, but we are the church, so we're upset with it.
Yes.
But I really think the power of the church is in worship, and the taking of the body and the blood together, and going to that place and being the body, and coming together in compassion, and saying we don't have it made, but then hearing the good news together, no matter who we're hearing that, we're brothers and sisters. Because we've all been baptized. That's me with the power. And that's what I see out in the church.
And then there can be things you ask for specifics, like Stevens ministry and shepherding ministry and 12-step programs and all these things. But out of liturgy, out of worship, out of communion.
Yes.
It seems to me that the worship experience alone does not sustain people, because beyond that, that's a communal process, but I think that, you know, each of us are invited into a personal relationship with God, and I think that sometimes isn't open for people, obviously doesn't, until there has been an experience or a sense of relational community with another person or with another people. And to me, this is what creates a sense of community within a church. And if it's not found there, if it doesn't take place, people leave.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking as you were saying that too. I was wondering how many people go to a particular church solely because of the worship. You know, aside from the relationship. Yes. Yeah. And the worship is central to faith. I mean, that's what worship is for. I mean, worship is to enhance the faith.
I kind of want to hit something you just said. People would go because of a particular worship. Now, we have traveled quite a bit in the last few years. And our daughter has just moved recently to a couple of different places around the St. Paul area. And in going to a new church, I've had different feelings. One where she used to live, I'm not going to mention the suburb of St. Paul, where it was. We walked in and it was as cold as ice. It was a Lutheran congregation, the liturgy was there, the worship is the same thing we all do every Sunday, but it was the coldest type of thing I have ever seen in my life. And we were visitors, nobody visited, came up to us afterwards, and we left, and nobody said a word to us. A year later, we're visiting my daughter, because she moved to another suburb, and it was completely opposite. The warmth and the love, and you just feel the feeling of community. So it isn't the liturgy that's going to turn me on. It's the community of that church, the feeling, the friendship, the fellowship. And if I were living in that community where that cold church was, I might have even gone to another denomination.
You didn't come out and challenge me, but as I was waiting for you to challenge me, I thought about, I don't think that we can really separate relationship from worship. Yeah. So it's not like they're two separate, distinct things. So that's why I thought you were going to sing the answer. But, please, yeah.
I think one of the problems that perhaps even we're encountering in this discussion is that we're talking about only the gathered community of the church. And I think perhaps the most powerful aspect of the church is the scattered community. And if we're focused only upon God's activity upon the address that our church letterhead is on, I think we're very narrow-minded. And in other words, I think God's active as a person goes to work as a librarian, an architect, a person who manages a hardware store. And Christ is alive in that business, or that simple labor of love as a parent.
Yeah, or even the unemployed person, the homeless person. I appreciate that. Thank you. And that's what another piece we've been pushing this week is the challenge of the church being the unemployed, the homeless, the disenfranchised. Yeah, no, that's really very important.
I too lost my husband after a long illness. And during that illness, I saw him down in many places. I saw him in silence. In the middle of the night. For many, many weeks, I was awakened at 3 o'clock. And that was my communion time with God. And it was a beautiful time. I found a new friend in my church family. When I would feel really low, it would come to me in some spectacular way. In the sunshine, I would go home.
Right here.
We have to be over. We have to decide sometimes. I'm here. Let him come in.
Yes. Thank you. But I thought this would take off a lot more than this. I feel like, in a lot of ways, I felt guilty. I felt like I was really pushing a lot of Europeans. And I thought you might respond by coming back with some of your stories, but I don't want to speculate on why we're not hearing more from you folks.
I could go on all night, Kelly. I'm working at being quiet. You're welcome.
Pardon?
You're welcome.
When you talk about, you know, the politics and stuff with the organized church, a lot of us aren't involved in that. It's kind of over our heads, and we don't really see that. We see our local community or our local people, and we see if they're friendly toward us, and we see if they do more than just come at 11 and go home at 12 and never say much to anyone. And our church, there's a lot of, or there might be a few people that come for 1 hour and go home, and it's their loss because it's full of friendly people that care. And I think a lot of us, maybe we're naive, but that's all we see.
No,
mostly what we see.
When you say you're not a part of the organized church, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean the bureaucrats, the politics, the committees, the bishops, you know, all the commissions and things like that.
The layers.
Yeah, how things are done, you know, that we don't always see, always. Yeah.
How many people here are involved in the organized church?
Involved.
Involved on committees or, you know what's going on and that kind of participation.
What level?
In your own church?
In your own church?
No, not in your congregation.
In your synod.
Yeah, synod or, district. You know, yeah, aware of what's going on. Involved in it. Oh, very, very few.
Yeah, see, I think that's where the silence comes from me, speaking for myself. I go to the Lutheran church, but I don't consider I'm not a lifelong Lutheran, and I have some agreement with a man that's at the back there that was talking about the greater extension of the church. When I think of the church, I used to look for inspiration in many different churches and in profound ways, and look for God in that way. As I've grown and aged, I've found that I find God in mundane, everyday occurrences, with people, with miracles that perhaps are only miracles to me. And it has nothing to do with an organized church. It has to do with how I open my heart to God on a very personal level. And it doesn't have anything to do with what anybody told me or what any liturgy says or whether I worship together with somebody or not. It has to do with the God that I open to within you and that I allow for the possibility. And that's how I'm growing with God. And it doesn't have anything to do with church, so it's hard for me to put God in that, from my perspective, confine.
When people talk about I hear a lot of people talking about the liturgy, and I'm perceiving it as a negative thing. That it's the LV, you're talking about the LVW, the words, the music, the liturgy, the word liturgy means the work of the people. It's the work that we do together as a congregation to worship, and it doesn't have to be a specific setting. It doesn't have to be setting one or two. It's whether you are passively watching or if you are working together, as we're to work together in all of our life and fellowship together to worship. Without that working together, in some way, we lose something in our worship. I think we have to think about it in the way it is intended and actually what the word means, that it's
it's our community, it's our communion with one another to work together for one end, and that is our worship, which touches each person differently.
Well, I know that's what the book says, and that's what it's supposed to be. But that's not always the experience. One of the things that, for me in multicultural ministry, and that used to be a passion of mine, and creating structures, you know, where a lot of different people could come together. And one of my dreams is to start a multicultural choir that is not owned by a church or a congregation, but where people can come from different churches and do something. Well, we'll do it tonight at the worship. But so it's a way for people to come together and experience the relationship and not needing a lot of structure to do that. But that's just another example of people coming together. I love creating things like that. But that my plate's pretty full. I also intended to ask people about experiencing the church's power. And I think it's helpful to say, not looking at that from a church building or a congregation, but the church's power, where we experience the church's power. I'm really dependent on Lutherans and the church. I don't just go to Lutheran churches. But I have this program where I work with at-risk youth. And I take them to like rest. Well, one example is when I go back in 2 weeks, there's an owner of a 5-star restaurant that's going to let me bring 25 at-risk children there. And she's going to train them as waiters and waitresses. And then on that's going to be on a Saturday. And then on that Sunday, those kids who are trained will be able to invite their parents to that restaurant and they'll serve them dinner at a 5-star restaurant. And that's the power of the church, you know, to bring these kids who are under the stigma of, you know, being discarded, not having anything to offer, and giving them the power of actually doing for their parents, their grandmother, you know, the person that takes care of them. That's the power of the church to me. And we're, yeah, that's just in relationship to the children. But the other part of that power is that restaurant owner is able to experience church by that relationship of doing, of offering. And that's, you know, in my everyday activity, that's how I experience the church and the power of the church. But I really need for people to relate to the church in order to do that. And
that's my next question.
Yeah.
When you're, maybe I need a definition of what you're talking about in terms of church. Are you talking about the Lutheran organization that you are part of? Are you talking about that which Christ Jesus talked about as the church?
Right. I'm sorry. I that's a given that I just, I apologize.
Okay.
When I say church, that's the fellowship of all believers,
okay,
or the union of all believers, to use non-sexist language. But that's what the church is. And for me, it's always a matter of developing a language and imagery that everybody can fit into, you know, as opposed to excluding certain people because they don't have something to offer. And that's a real, that's what I'm really dependent upon as a pastor. It's because I need for people to buy into the church. And a lot of people say, I don't believe in the church because they haven't seen that the church is really doing what they perceive the church should be doing. And so it's a wonderful thing to see, to be a part of that reconciliation of people who have said, you know, the church isn't real, and to be able to make it real for people. I love that in ministry. But, I mean, and you do that by, people do that by bringing beer to a fire. I'd like to hear your stories. I could go on with mine. But, yeah,
people do it every day in many ways. I mean, I work for Head Start in my area. And I am constantly inspired by little, everyday, difficult, godly givings of children, adults, in many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love putting a name on it, you know? And that's part of the power, is putting a name on it.
Putting a name like what?
Church.
See, I have a problem with that. Because church is not necessarily, I mean, everybody has a different view of church. I mean, it can be Presbyterian, it can be Catholic, it can be Lutheran, it can be... I don't think that church, in the way that you're talking about it, is what, how most people think of it.
Right, right. That's why I want to do it.
Okay. Good.
Kelly?
Yes.
Shelters. Generally, I mean, that's a manifestation of church if I've ever experienced it. Just the constant inflow of giving. I have to be from Portland, which you don't know yet. And I was involved with the West Women's and Children's Shelter for quite a few years as a volunteer, but the West never budgeted for anything for food or toiletries or household, you know, cleansers, etc. It all came in through donations. They didn't budget for it, so they didn't have the budget for it, but it always came. Always came. In fact, at Christmas time, it comes in so much that that becomes kind of a storehouse to sustain through maybe the nine months, you know, for birthday presents for all the children plus other shelters, etc. But it's incredible, the outpouring that happens. And that is sustained on some basis generally throughout the year with the incredible influx, and it does happen on holiday times.
Where I see the church very visibly is in the funding of your program. And it is a double-edged sword. There, the church, in my opinion, has a sterling opportunity to witness in a very visible way the positive things that a church can do. And for a mere tuppence of the budget, we can get that. But I would wager that tuppence is either withheld or you have to fight like heck for it. And that, I see, is a power that is either used, and you're fully funded, and you're there to do a good job in the best way that can be, or you're not funded, and the power is abused.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to argue against I have a lot of confidence. That's another thing. Well, it's just my story. I have a lot of confidence in that. Yeah, I can always leave the church. I mean, the institution. I know I can go out and receive employment. I know I can go out to a church and worship, regardless of what structure it is. I'm trained in all of that. My concern is always the people behind me. You know, that's what I'm called to do. And I feel like I have that confidence with my salary. I mean, someone here may make the connection. The bishop may make the connection. Some business may make the connection. But being faithful to the church, the big church, not the little church, you know, I believe it's going to happen. But I, you know, appreciate you speaking up.
Next time I see Paul, I'll twist his arm.
Well, I've worked. Paul's there. Paul's my bishop. It's the same. I trust that the bishop, you know, is doing what he can do. But anyway, that's my story.
I think that I have to say a little bit about, I'm at a point in my life where I feel that all the people I've ever come in contact with, I believe all people have a spirituality. And I have found that over the years that I'm a little uncomfortable saying I'm Lutheran or even I'm Christian because, you know, just because you've been exposed to a different thought doesn't mean to exclude those who haven't been. But it's just like in my gathering with people in the workplace has been a more spiritual situation. I have had more support given to me, and I have been able to give more than I could in what we were classifying as the organized church situation. And I don't want to downplay that. I just think that to me it's a sad thing that I have to acknowledge that. And I know that's not true everywhere. But it's like when Ron Vignette was saying, you know, about McDonald's. I had never thought about it in that aspect. There are more, you know, McDonald's. And they're probably really helping more people that need help than we are as a church in that sense. I mean, we have so much, there's so much capacity there. But for some reason, we haven't been able to make it happen. And I hesitate when I'm dealing with the people that I do deal with from all walks of life who haven't had the opportunities that I've had. I do not want to be so smug as to even, you know, actions to me speak far greater than words. And hopefully by the modeling, a greater message is imparted.
Anybody have another view of that? Yes. Or, yeah.
I don't see the church stopping when you walk off the door.
Pardon?
I don't see the church stopping when you walk off the door. You know, the building, which I agree with you, the world. The church is a larger body. And if someone comes into the church, our church, I see them going back into the community. They haven't left the church. They still are the church, the people. So when they're in the workforce, or at the Head Start, or wherever they are, they still are the church.
It's sort of what I heard yesterday as well, where the church is succeeding if the people that belong to the local organizations, the local Lutheran church or whatever, are able to translate their experience there and move it out into the community, into a McDonald's or into a corporation or into a social organization or whatever. So I totally agree. It just, to say that the workplace, for example, is providing more than the church. Well, it could be simply an extension of what the church is providing by bringing people together in the workplace that are able to furnish that. So I think if we're looking at the church in a more global way, I think there's some success there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would agree with her that the church could claim its power much more in saying where the church is in the workplace. That's a lot of what Ron was saying too. And that's owning the church's power in the workplace. And you know, wherever we go from our worship experience to proclaim the church there. I can say I've been where you are. I guess that's the best thing I can say. But I'm really into the church's power now and what the church can do for those who don't have a voice, for those who are in pain, for those whose house is on fire. I think we really need to put that in a language that comes back in on Sundays. You know, it's a two-way street.
I can give you a concrete example, Kelly, of the church. If you're talking about church's power and the use of the church to accomplish something, in the food bank where we are in Hamilton, Montana, I'm co-president of it. And last year we had $24,000 given to us by the federal government, FEMA money, and it cut it out completely. at the end of the year, but the statistics said no unemployment. Well, I didn't count the people living in caves and homeless and all that, obviously, you know, that stuff. And shortly after we were trying to assess the situation, what are we going to do, we have a member of the board who happens to be representing our board on the Ministerial Association, representing all the churches in the community. So I said to him, can we go through the churches in the community and let them know that we've lost our money and we need more contributions than we've ever had? He said, well, better than that, why don't you come and talk to me? So, another coincidence, it was the meeting that had the highest attendance of the year. They just happened to be there, not knowing I was going to be there. And I appealed to them. I sent out the letter. I gave them stacks of information to pass out to their congregations and all. The contributions just poured in. I mean, they absolutely poured in within a month, coming from the people in the church. Then, about a month later, I was called on by a reporter who came in and said, what if you don't get the federal, any federal, but we were appealing and hoping to get federal money back again? And she said, what if you don't get the money? I said, I don't play that game. Now, she had her agenda, you know, reporters. They are going to, they know what they want to write and they want us to say it. And I wasn't going to say it. I have.
They're going to write it anyway.
Well, she didn't. I cut her off. I said, I don't play what if we don't get the money. I said, I have faith in the people in this community, and I have faith in God. This is a Christian organization, that we are going to get the money and we are going to get the food. And the contributions continued to pour in. And in March, they had a community food drive. We couldn't find, we had to wade through all the stuff that was on the floor. We couldn't find our way from one end of the place to the other. Now, those are mostly churches that came through. But again, it's a faith situation. And that's a mechanical process. And that if you're talking about the power of the church, is that what you mean?
That's exactly. It's exactly what I mean.
The thing that I've been sitting here thinking about, a lot of the things that we seem to be concentrating on are things we do. And I'm struggling inside myself with the balance between the things that we do as a church or a body, whether corporate, small, however, whatever size you're looking at, and what happens in terms of evangelism with those outside who maybe don't know the gospel, in terms of a soul response, in terms of a faith response, what's happening in their personal relationship with Christ. And I don't have any special set thing, but I'm just thinking about the fact that we're talking about doing a lot of things, and where does the message of personal response to what Jesus has done for us in our faith life and those who don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Exactly. The life and teachings of Jesus is what the church is about. And that's my relationship. That's how I see what you're talking about growing in the way that you want to see it, or at least how I perceive you want to see it growing. If every one of us took our personal relationship to the marketplace every day, wherever we go, and use that personal relationship with every human being we come in contact with, we wouldn't be sitting here intellectualizing.
Right.
Well, we'd be, or this is an intellectual discussion.
Yeah.
And that's not tough to do.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Yeah. What I love about that, then I wouldn't be sitting up here leading, you know, a session where I'm burned out. I mean, you guys are the ones to do it, and we're the ones that God has called to do the work, and we don't need any experts to do that. My job is to proclaim the gospel, to preach, you know, and administer the sacraments. You know, it's all of our job to be those representatives out in the community. I guess the last thing that I really want to say about that is that beyond the comfortable conversation, the intellectual conversation, is to push that, you know, absolutely to the limits, that we're talking about people whose lifestyles are contrary to ours, you know, that we're talking about everybody here, and whether the bishops or anybody else likes it. You know, Netter was talking about images of God, and, you know, for her as a woman, how difficult that is for her to see God as a loving God for her, just because it doesn't talk about her the same way it talks about her brother. I don't have any concrete, you know. I just want to say we should all be pushed to the limit in seeing God. And that's really the bottom line. I'm fine with leaving the session at that. You know, God confronts us, and we're called to respond. Bottom line. Thank you.